Welcome to the State of Florida Sports Podcast, presented by the USA Today Network. Here's your host, Tim Walters.
It just hasn't been the Florida Gators' decade when it comes to football. Over the four seasons since 2020, the Gators only have one winning season, and that was in 2020 when they were 8-4. They've had three losing seasons since. If you're wondering about Florida futility by decade, the 1940s had to be their worst. They didn't even have a winning season. They had two 5-5 seasons, and the rest were sub-500 efforts. Heck, they didn't even field a team in 1943, although I imagine the war had something to do with that. As they say, hope springs eternal, and with this weekend's spring game, hope returns to Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. Today, Gainesville Sun columnist David Whitley joins me to tell me just how much hope Gator fans should have in the 2024 season. He'll be joining me in just a moment. Hello again, everybody. I'm Tim Walters, and thank you once again for joining me on the State of Florida Sports Podcast, powered by the USA Today Network. This podcast utilizes our Florida Sports Network of beat writers, columnists, and some special guests to bring you up to speed on the most important sports topics. Our Florida network consists of 17 news sites that encompass the state. We encourage you to subscribe to your hometown newspaper and, of course, this podcast to help support the incredible journalism done by our talented staffs. David Whitley has been on a tear writing columns about Florida football. Let's bring him in now to hear what he's been saying. David, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Tim. It's always a pleasure and a privilege.
Absolutely. Well, I thank you for being here. And, you know, before we start talking about the Florida football team, I'm curious, David, the past few years, this game was held on Thursday nights to get them more visibility. This year, it's back on a Saturday at 1 p.m. Do you know the particular reasons why that's happened?
Well, yeah, when Napier came in 2 years ago, they just thought they'd give it a try. They wanted to get more recruits here, because everybody's having their spring games right now on Saturdays. And they thought, well, Thursdays, it'll be easier to rope some of these guys in and see it. I think they feel it went okay. But, you know, I think the feedback they got from the average fan is that they miss having it as an event, a weekend, make it sort of like a mini fall Saturday where they can come, you know, on their day off from work and drive in from, you know, wherever, Orlando, you know, Tallahassee, if there are any Gator fans in Tallahassee, or, you know, Jacksonville, wherever, and just tailgate and make it more like a game day experience like it was for so many years. And so they want to do that and give that a try. And I think they feel they still will, you know, get enough recruits in here that matter. And if not, you know, I mean, recruits visit seem like 10 or 12 times anyway. So I don't think they figure they're gonna win or lose any recruit just based on, you know, whether it's a Thursday night or a Saturday night where they show up at the Swamp.
Yeah, well, I mean, why hold a game when it's comfortable out on a Thursday evening when you could swelter in the Florida sun at 1 p.m.?
Yeah, well, hopefully by then the eclipse will be over. It wouldn't be sort of like, if it's not, I guess we got bigger problems than just Florida's offensive line this year.
Yeah, that's when it crosses over from the eclipse to the apocalypse. So let's avoid that. All right, David. So obviously all eyes are going to be on the quarterback position during the orange and blue game. On one side, you have 23-year-old Graham Mertz, who's going into his sixth year, his second with the Gators after transferring in from Wisconsin. On the other side, you have the 5-star freshman DJ Lagway, someone this program has been buzzing about seemingly, I don't know, for most of this decade, I think, since he was like in fourth grade. So all signs point to Mertz retaining his starting position. But he and Lagway, you're going to see both of them. They're saying all the right things. And so tell us what you've been seeing and hearing, and what are the odds you put on Lagway starting at least at some point in 2024?
I would say the odds are about as good as RFK Jr. winning the presidency. I mean, there's a chance, but I wouldn't be betting on it. You know, he hadn't by any means been a disappointment or in any respect in spring practice, you know, but I mean, the fact is that he's one of these kids that, you know, he should be getting measured for his tuxedo to go to the prom this year. And, you know, and you just can't expect somebody like that to come in and grasp a college passing system, even Florida, you know, and make that jump right away and be able to run the offense as it has to be. And so it's, as one person put it, you know, in their quarterback room, it's like he says Mertz is taking calculus and Lagway's taking pre-algebra. You know, he he's got all the talent that he's cracked up to be. You see him out there, and it's funny, I mean, the first look we got the first day of spring practice, you know, he could go out there for this 15-minute window, and you see him. And we were just, me and another reviver was debating whether to call him a beast or a thoroughbred. So we figured we'd go with the beastly thoroughbred. You know, he's size wise, speed wise. I mean, he looks like a stud, great arm, but you know, mechanics needs to work on just grasping the offense. It's not going to happen overnight. I mean, he's doing okay, but these things take time. I mean, whereas Mertz, as you said, I mean, the guy's beginning his AARP card pretty soon. You know, I mean, he came in here with 20 some odd starts in the Big Ten, and so he was grizzled when he came, and now he's really grizzled. But in the past year, he's really sort of established himself as a team leader, and I mean, he does everything that you would want out of a QB, you know, as far as just setting a tone for the whole team and offense. And I mean, he's a workaholic. And, you know, he's sort of become almost a Rodney Dangerfield type character, in that he came in with a suspect reputation because he didn't pan out as everybody thought, because he was sort of a DJ Lagway 6 years ago, and he got to Wisconsin and is sort of, you know, he had like, I don't know, 39 TDs and 26 interceptions. And so, you know, he needed a new place and a new scenery, and the change of scenery was really good. I mean, he came in last year and, you know, he was all that, you know, they could have hoped for. The only real, I think, legit criticism of him was that he tended to be a little bit too conservative sometimes, throw short, didn't go with a deep ball a lot. And I mean, there are other factors in it, like, you know, A, he didn't have a lot of time to throw. So they're trying to get him to be more be more of a good risk taker. But I mean, otherwise, I mean, he established himself as a really solid QB. I mean, really. Some people will never get over the fact, he wasn't that good at Wisconsin. So I see some of these ratings things, and he's still rated like the 10th best QB in the SEC. I mean, he's one of the better players on that team, and I think he's really good. So, you know, add that to the fact that Lagway is, you know, just acting like a freshman is supposed to act, and it would be really hard to see him coming in and taking the job from Mertz.
Yeah, you know, Mertz, I kind of see him as, like, if you look in the mid-2000s when Chad Pennington was doing well, but you would compare him to Tom Brady and there was just no comparison. So it's like Mertz is kind of that short field guy, accurate, high completion percentage, but like you say, isn't going to chuck it downfield. Now, Lagway, on the other hand, it sounds like you were just describing a minotaur where, you know, like this bull with a human half comes out and is ready to stomp you. So if they can teach him how to run a competent college football offense, that ought to be great.
Yeah, and they will probably have some, they will have some set plays for him where they take advantage of that. You know, I mean, everybody harkens back to Tim Tebow's freshman year, where, you know, Chris Leak was the incumbent QB and, you know, well-established QB, and in comes Tebow with all the hype. And, but, you know, really, I mean, Leak was, he was the QB of that team. At least Tebow came in and, you know, with the gadget plays, and people remember them so well. He was running and it was, you know, a really good apprenticeship year for him. And then he was ready in year two and, you know, off they go. And I mean, I think that would be the realistic expectation for Lagway this year.
Yeah, well, hopefully he's got his speech pre-written, because Tebow's was, you know, it's the thing of lore etched outside the stadium.
So. Yeah. Boy, they would hope that in 2 years they're in the position to say, we'll never lose again.
Yeah, good luck with that. And one reason helping thwart that, my next subject here on my rundown, you know, let's talk about the transfer portal, because this thing's got my head spinning. You know, whenever I hear transfer portal, I feel like I'm in Spaceballs and I'm waiting for Snotty to beam down President Scroob, who shows up with his head on backwards. But, you know, this thing is just, it's out of hand. Talk about some of the key players who have departed, and we'll talk about more of the Trevor Etienne situation, so he's obviously a big one, but talk about some other players who have maybe left or come in via the transfer portal.
Yeah, Trevor's in a category by himself. We'll get to him. But they lost, you know, gosh, I think, you know, 18, 20 guys, but a lot of those were sort of nudged out the door as they wanted to flip the flip the roster and keep upgrading it. The names that really they might miss would be a guy like Scooby Williams, who was linebacker, went to Texas A&M, and a couple of DBs, Jalen Kimber, Jaden Hill, played a lot last year. But in general, actually the other big one is Princey Umanmielen, who was their defensive player of the year. And he went to Missouri, and he made some noise heading out there. He has lately saying that he just wasn't coached well at Florida. And he's getting it at Missouri, to which Florida says, well, you know, look where you were before, and you're an all SEC. So we were doing something right. So you don't know whether they're just sour grapes or whatnot. It's funny, ATN and Umanmielen. And again, I will not miss having to pronounce his name continually anymore. We'll call him Princely. They were the best offensive and defensive players that the Gators had. Let's just, so that'll have some impact. They bought in. They feel, you know, they've upgraded a lot of positions. I mean, these names won't mean much to anybody unless you're just a portal geek. But the one guy they lost, well, not to the portal, but you know, their best receiver before it was Ricky,
Pearsall.
Pearsall. All right, so already escaped my mind. He just ran out of eligibility, and he'll probably go pretty high in the draft, at least second round, they say. So they bought in a guy from Wisconsin, Shamir Dyke, who Mertz knew pretty well, and he's been pretty impressive in spring practice. So he'll probably be this year, you know, the guy that they pencil in for Pearsall was. And they've been giving a lot of buzz to the two offensive tackles they bought in, because that was a real problem spot last year. They just they thought they bought in two good tackles last year, and they weren't that good. So they bought in two more this year. One is a guy named Brandon Crenshaw Dixon, who was from San Diego State, and the other is Devin Manuel from Arkansas. Big guys. They talk a lot about length these days, and they're both like 6'6", 6'7", and just huge human beings, and they feel a lot better about that position. That they'll give Mertz a lot more time to throw this year with those guys, and they got a couple of safeties that are looking good. A guy named DJ Douglas from Tulane and Asa Turner from Washington, who both have a lot of playing time. They think they'll really, you know, bring some good experience to the backfield, defensive backfield, which was really thin last year with experience. And they also been really pumping up a linebacker, a guy from Jacksonville, I think, originally, but he went to South Carolina, transferring from there, a guy named Grayson Pup is his nickname, Howard. With transfers, you just sprinkle in, you don't know for sure what you're going to get. They have a fairly decent batting average on this, but they've had some swings and misses too on it. So some of these guys will definitely help them along the way. So, I mean, on balance, you know, losing the two big guys like Princely and Trevor, though, that those are two guys that'll be hard to replace.
Yeah, let's talk about Trevor now, because it's always incredibly sad. I mean, look, the Gators didn't do well. He was a star in the making. He wants to go to Georgia, transfers, and then almost immediately is arrested and charged with DUI. So, you know, tell us about that situation and what your thoughts are on Trevor Etienne.
Yeah, you know, anytime I hear about a guy in DUI, you know, I never criticize, because I think, oh, but for the grace of God, there go I. You know, I think everybody, you know, only way you can really make a joke about it is if you've never had a drink and gotten behind the wheel of a car, because it can happen. You know, it could have happened to quite a few of us over the years. I was never the stud QB or the stud running back coming to a team that has been under this incredible microscope for driving violations and stuff like that, and DUI type stuff. And you'd think that he would have enough self-awareness to say, look, you know, I probably got a, you know, $500,000 NIL bag, if not more, to come here. I can afford an Uber tonight. You know, I don't need to drive home or drive back to the dorm. So it was just a bad, you know, unfortunate situation. I don't think it's karma, the Gator karma, you know, that this is what he gets for abandoning the Gators. Although, man, that really was a low blow to a lot of the hardcore Gators around here, who just, you know, it's hard enough to adjust to the transfer portal, where for guys that you really have invested emotionally in leave. But when, you know, that guy goes to that school, you know, it has really struck him, struck home here. And you hear words like treasonous, traitor, that kind of thing. You know, I just say, look, you know, I see how, where they're coming from for that. But I also can see Trevor's point of view is that, you know, he was sharing the ball here. You know, he was a 1A or 1B option, you know, with Johnson, Montrell Johnson, who's a good back. And he said, he's like, I could be number two there and just play, you know, my senior year or my final year there. Or I could, you know, be number one at Georgia and play for a national championship probably. So, you know, from that aspect, I don't blame him for going, you know, because, you know, he's not going to be playing for a national championship here. Not this next year. He wouldn't have been.
Yeah, like I said, it's a shame. It's an interesting perspective that you lend there, though, because you haven't really heard a lot of people say, hey, you know what, that could be anybody. So I think that's an incredibly true thing to say. But it also does make you wonder, some of these young guys, they have a lot of things early in life. They want to show them off. I'm curious what type of car he was driving when this happened, you know, because like you say, you could do it in an Uber, but you can't show off if you show up in a BMW.
Yeah, well, I will say this: it is amazing how much nicer the car, the player parking lot looks these days than it did, you know, even 5 years ago. I mean, it's like a Dodge Charger showroom, you know, lot of nice rides in the parking lot these days.
Yeah, well, you know, that's, you know, again, an unfortunate situation. But now we can look at, you know, there is somebody coming into the program who's not named DJ Lagway that has a lot of people excited. And he's also the son of a former Florida Gator star. So probably figure it out. I am talking about Miles Graham. So tell us what you know about him.
Yeah, probably one of the three or four highest rated recruits after Lagway and LJ McCray from Daytona. But, you know, he's right up there, you know, and he is one of these guys like Lagway. He's not just a player. He's a personality. He's a sort of like a program maker. He bleeds orange and blue, the old cliche, but it's true, because of, you know, his dad, Ernest Graham. And I forgot where they were, but, you know, they transferred into Gainesville. He moved to Gainesville last year and he transferred and played at Buchholz High. You know, big year there, stud. But somewhere along the way, he suffered a neck injury, but he played through it and you know, didn't think that big of a deal. Well, they get to spring practice here and it's still bugging him, and so they go ahead and he's had surgery to repair it, and so he's not playing this spring. They think he's going to be okay by the fall. You know, you just cross your fingers and hope so. With those things, you never know. But yeah, if he's out there, I don't think he'll be a starter right away. But he's definitely, I think they were looking for him to contribute a lot this year and eventually become, you know, one of their stalwarts on defense. So, you know, we shall see. But, you know, right now the whole legacy Graham come in and be a star thing, it's sort of on hold because of this. Well, they say neck back, but we hear it's a disc thing. And, you know, hopefully, it has been taken care of and he'll be good as new, you know, come September, and he can pick right up.
All right. Well, I've always liked the name Miles, and he spells it cool with a Y. So, you know,
think of your great. And actually, it's not a lot of athletes. You know, think of Miles. You know, it's more, you know, you think of the president of the chess club. You know, that's the Miles. But so I, you know, he could probably get some pardon the pun, mileage off that on NIL anyway, doing something with the Miles.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it just sounds like a musician even, you know, maybe he should be in the band. But
like Miles Standish.
Yeah, there you go. A good British man. So, you know, now, obviously, one of the reasons we're here talking today is because in a few days, we have the Orange and Blue Spring Game. So, you know, why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, what do they hope to accomplish in this game? Obviously, no one's going to care if orange beats blue or blue beats orange. What should the fans really be watching for here?
Well, it's sort of funny, you know. It's hard to draw firm conclusions from a spring game. I mean, you know, last year the defense looked really good. They were blitzing all over the place and got a lot of sacks, and the offensive line looked terrible. And so that sort of turned to being half prophetic, is that, you know, the offensive line was Pretty much let's just put it nice and say, not up to par last year. That's had its issues. But you know, the defense turned into, just a tire slash dumpster fire, train derailment, of historic proportions. So, anybody who came away from spring game thinking, hey, we got the defense is finally going to sack together, was certainly disappointed 6 months later. When it was anything, when it had anything but its act together. So it's hard to say. I mean, it's sort of interesting in a way because they're trying to really play up the competitive angle for this and make it feel like a game. They're going to split up the teams and have the teams draft the coaches this year and all that and try to balance it out where it won't be just ones and twos, but ones against twos kind of thing, but more of a mix. So you get, so it won't just, be Lagway having to go against first teamers and Mertz going against second teamers kind of thing. So yeah, it's funny, all eyes eventually get back to though the QB and what you're going to get with Mertz, but how will the wunderkind look out there, against live fire or, semi live fire? They're not going to be tackling him, but, just reading the defenses and stuff like that. And what will he look like? The one scrimmage we've seen, there were some, some gaffes and interceptions and the kind of thing that give people, sort of tap the brakes on the hype train. I still think he's going to have a couple of wow plays where he just, as they say, makes plays with his legs, which used to be a way of saying he runs the ball really well. I think they're going to see that. And, but if Mertz throws five interceptions, I think, people will panic, but I don't think that'll happen. I mean, he knows the drill now and all that. Last year we came away thinking, yeah, the defense might be improved and it wasn't. So, that was really going to be the key, just going in, the entire fall, I mean, the offense, got criticized a fair amount last year, but really it was not the problem, especially as the year went on. I mean, and the defense after a semi-decent start just, fell off the face of the earth. And, will that finally come around? It's been a long time since the Gators had, a defense that wasn't, frankly, just abominable.
Yep, I agree. And that would be something if that defense came away with five Mertz interceptions, but I'm not going to bet on that one on DraftKings or anything. Another big storyline, obviously, for the whole year is going to be Billy Napier. Personally, I've met him. I like him. He's personable. He's easy to talk to. He doesn't seem to get rattled easily, but it's starting to change a little bit. And, I think a bad start to this season could, ultimately spell doom. He's 11-14 over his two seasons. So, how has he seemed over the course of spring, and how do you foresee things going for him this year?
Yeah, it's sort of funny. He seemed really relaxed. At first of a couple of days, we asked him about, he says, that he feels he's finally has, and he says, the system's in place. He's a big managerial systems guy. And organization and these big flow charts, and he thinks that, he knew that there was a lot of things that needed to be revamped and redone and just totally, torn down and rebuilt when he came in. But I think he was even surprised from the talent level, how bad things have gotten, and from the culture aspect that, he needed to, as one coach put it, get rid of the riffraff. So he feels he's got the kind of roster, just the culture that he likes that is building on the team, and he thinks that the talent is definitely improved. He says everything's in place. They're like the plane is built now. He's just got to fly it. That's the question: will it fly? The schedule is so tough. They're going to have to. The toss up games are early. There's five or six that they could win. Then it gets really tough at the end of the year. So they need to be, start off with at least, 5-1, 4-2 to avoid a 500 season. Because if it's 500 or worse, even if things are looking up and they're playing competitively and all that, that would be the fourth straight, non-winning season at Florida. And he would be only responsible for three of them, but still. That would be a tough sell. I don't know if they could bring him back after that, even if things are looking good. Maybe they could, because they've made such an investment in the program with him. And then here you go, you're starting again. bringing in a new guy. So they certainly want to avoid that. But one thing they must avoid is this the silly plays, the losses that really stamp you as being incompetent, or the plays like that, which they had too many of last year, like too many men on the field, which cost them the game, against Arkansas, arguably, and having two number threes on the field, and just Keystone Cops type stuff. If you're gonna lose, you have to lose cleanly, as opposed to looking like you just don't like you're incompetent and you don't have your act together. So they really need to avoid that. I don't know if I answered your question, because it's really just a wait and see. But Napier, he. Just from the body language and his talk, he's, as you said, he's not an overly emotional guy anyway, but you can tell, I think he sort of enjoys or is glad that they are being so underestimated, or just, we'll see if they're underestimated or not, but just the expectations are that, man, they'll be lucky to get 500, the bar set so low. So it'll be easier to jump over that bar if they, and I think, a winning season and maybe, the last five games, against, what is it, Georgia, Ole Miss, FSU, LSU, I forget, five teams that are in the top 15. If things steal a win there, maybe two, then, that'll be enough. I have always said, you got to give him at least 3 years to judge it. So we'll see. But it, to be fair, it may be four, but I don't know, if it's anything less than, six wins, I don't see him being around next year. We'll be talking about somebody else.
Yeah, I think there's two schools of thought. If the season ends like that, maybe he gets one more year because he gets to give it a try with Lagway, or maybe they could get a home run hit on hiring a coach who wants to coach Lagway. So, as it unfolds, it'll be interesting. And, David, when you look at that first game of the season, we won't go through the schedule now because that's something we'll do as the season gets near, but I just want to look at that particular one, the season opener, August 31st. You have the Miami Hurricanes coming in. These two programs kind of are pretty similar right now. So, how do you expect that one to go right there?
Yeah, I think Billy Napier looks in the mirror and he sees Mario Cristobal and vice versa. two coaches brought in, same time, hired within a couple of weeks of each other. Both bought in to resurrect programs that have fallen by the wayside, and so far both you can only say that it's been disappointing for both of them. And the break out the old term hot seat. Well, I am glad that they meet right away, because we'll get a lot of answers. We don't have to sift through a couple of set up cupcake games to see what's going to happen. So immediately, September 1st or 2nd, I don't know the exact date, in the swamp, here we go, and we'll find out what you got. I think that, whoever loses, it's not a must win game just yet, but it's close to it from a narrative standpoint, because it'll set the tone right away. It says, man, you're still behind Miami. You came in, we gave you all this money, and you go up there and you lost to Napier, kind of thing. So the fan, it will hurt more deeply, than it should to the fans, who will be, watching this very keenly, so whoever loses, will go from the hot seat to the scalding seat right away.
Well, I don't know how scalding it is, given what, I think Cristobal would walk away now with about $50 million, and Napier would get about 20 or 30 on a buyout.
So I think he'd be about 26, Now Jimbo Fisher finds that much between his couch cushions these days, wherever he is on his private island. Good for you, and Jimbo.
I need to find that couch at the Goodwill, I tell you. David, I could sit here and pepper with you with questions all day, but we're up against it on time here. So is there anything else you'd like to get in front of the audience about the Orange and Blue game, the Gators, anything you're working on? What else you got?
Just usual stuff. Hang in there. It's funny, a few weeks ago, Spurrier stirred things up by saying, that they need to clean. He's talking to Gene Frenette there in the Times Union. It's really got a big stirred thing up, and I called Spurrier shortly after that and asked him about that. And he said, well, I was just saying what everybody else is saying, and you call Spurrier, ask him a question, you're going to get an answer. And he was, you know, he said they got to tidy things up. But he did say, look, but that was then, says I was talking about last year, says next year, I think they're going to turn it around. And he predicted, first he said 9-3, then he said, nah, make it 8-4-1 and they'll win a bowl game. Says, how long since we won a bowl game? Says, I couldn't remember, says that. So I'll leave you with that, Gator fans, that the head, the chief, the God Gator is thinking things are going to be okay this fall.
Yeah, and if you're wondering exactly what he said to Gene Frenette, I have it right here in front of me. Coach Spurrier said, there's a feeling around the Gators of, what the heck are we doing? There's a lot of questions that I don't have the answers to about the organization. Just because you hire the most people doesn't mean you're going to win. All these extra people, I question how much that really helps. Billy is a good guy who works his tail off. I like Billy, good family man, but we do wish the organization was a little bit more tidy. So, scathing rebuke from Caesar.
Yes. Billy, you know, he just sort of smiled and said, yeah, well, you know, he it's hard to argue because he, you know, what Spurrier's saying is what fans, he says, yeah, people are right. Says, we got to tidy things up. So, you know, we shall see, Tim.
All righty. Well, David, it's always great having you here. Again, you can find all of his work for the Gainesville Sun at Gainesville.com, Gatorsports.com, and on X/Twitter at David E. Whitley. What's the E stand for?
I would like to say excellent, but that would be a bad joke. Elliot, believe it or not. Elliot, so.
Oh, all right. I was thinking maybe Ezekiel, but I guess I was wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. After this conversation, I wish it was M for Miles. I really like Miles, too.
Well, there you go. David, I appreciate you being here, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, Tim. Thanks.
And that will do it for another episode of the State of Florida Sports Podcast. I'm Tim Walters, and to quote Gators legend Tim Tebow, I'm not perfect. I never will be. Me neither, Tim, but at least we both have a great first name. Thanks for listening, and join me again next time.